It's been a nice day. We all went swimming, me and my sweetheart and our boy. It's been a nice day. We had a good time. The sun was shining and life was joy. It was at a friend's house we got invited. We can't afford a swimming pool ourselves. Our beds are unmade, our bills are half paid, but we got beans up on the shelves. I'm 43 now, my hair is going. I got a shaky sense of self-esteem. But in that water, that smile on my boy's face, for a moment life was not a bad dream. It's been a nice day. We all went swimming. I love you, Daddy. He said that twice. Nothing got broken. No one got sunburned. I never freaked out. It was nice. I worry often. I live in terror of what life may have in store. I've got this vision working at Mapco, making change when I'm 64. I'll be an old man. I'll have had a good time. I'll have, God willing, my boy and my girl. And then I'll die and go to God's house singing, take me from this world. It's been a nice day. We all went swimming, me and my sweetheart and our boy.
Our guest on this evening's Flipside is Tommy Womack. That's one of his songs, one of his best songs, from a recording called There, I Said It.
There, I did it, I said it. It's out there.
You know, before I heard the There, I Said It song, I loved the title of the record because I was like, what is it, you know, that he's going to say?
What's he saying?
But this is such a tender song.
Yeah, it was... I wrote that on a scrap of paper in Todd Snyder's tour bus. I was touring with him and his band, playing bass for him at the time. And I wrote the lyrics down, and I, you know, a few days later, that was in Texas. And, you know, I don't know, two or three days later, the bus rolled back into Nashville, and I wound up at home. And I was excited about the lyrics, but I didn't have a tune yet. I hadn't played it on guitar or anything. And I walk in the front door, and my son is sitting there in the living room watching television or something. And, you know, he's in the song. I say, buddy, I wrote a song, and you're in it. You want to hear it? And he says, sure. And the song is nothing but the same three chords over and over again. There's no bridge. There's no chorus. It's just E, F sharp, A, over and over again. And the reason for that being was I just vamped what I was singing and playing to him. You know, I had the words in front of me. I didn't have anything else, so I just vamped it. And what I you know, improvised coming out of me. He heard it all, and then he scooted over on the porch and put his arm around me, and I declared the song done. The song is officially written.
And maybe it's one of the things that really works in that song is that that just came straight out of you. You didn't think about it.
Yeah.
You didn't think like, oh, gosh, it needs a bridge.
No. It's a pretty pure song. It's probably the best thing I've ever written because it was real honest, you know. I almost threw it off that record because I thought it was too honest. I thought people would make fun of me if they heard me whining about my fears of dying poor or of being able to keep up the mortgage payments or this or that, you know. I've found out, you know, that everybody else apparently is scared too, and I've made a lot of friends because of that song.
Maybe you should have started it earlier. Do you ever think like that? Like, wow, maybe I shouldn't have been hiding these feelings.
No, totally. For some reason, I got it in prose. You know, with Cheese Chronicles came out in '94 or '95, and I wrote that totally from a place of honesty. That was. All the rock and roll memoir thing, and it touched people. You know, the book did pretty well for me. But when I went back to making records again, I made all these third person serial comic Ray Davies type of songs, and they were nice songs. They were okay, but none of them hit anything like when I came up with Nice Day and a bunch of other songs that are on the There I Said It record, which where I wrote from a pretty dark and lonely and scared place. And I didn't think anybody was going to be interested in hearing it, even though that's the same voice I'd been using to write the book. So for the first time after like five solo records, I did this whole record, There I Said It, that came out in 2007. And I thought that everything that was written on that record was done after I thought I have no more career. It's over with. And there's songs that you write, you know, just because they're there to be written, they don't have any future at all. And that's what I figured I was in. And I only recorded them because I thought, well, it'll be nice to have them someday when I'm old. And of course it grew legs and became a record that got released, and it wound up, you know, doing way better for me than any record I'd ever done because, you know, I was honest. It's all these honest cries for help kind of songs and honesty. Who knew, right?
Well, that I'm glad you mentioned Cheese Chronicles because that to me too is another like wonderful piece of art for the reason you say it's very honest. But it also goes into a perspective you really don't hear much in rock and roll biographies of like, what's it like not to quite make it?
Yeah.
Which is most people's story,
mm-hmm.
you know? And there's this great moment in that book where, and I have to say, I've related to it quite well. And I'll never forget it, reading it in the book, and you're talking about you're listening to some record that you'd made, and it's a few months or years later, and you go, this record kind of sucks. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I remember that moment sitting on our manager's couch listening to the record and just going, man, the recording quality is thin. My guitar tone sucks. I hate that little fake scream I did at that one point that just sounds so jive. I hate this. I hate this part of it. I hate this. Oh, it's another song. Oh, I hate this one even more. And the record wasn't even out yet. You know, it got delayed and delayed and delayed some more. And so I'm discovering that our record sucked months before it's actually going to come out. And, you know, nothing mattered more than having a cool record. Now it's like I'll be 53 next week, and you know, I make a record. I've got a new one in the can. It'll come out in the spring, and I've like listened to it three or four times since it got mastered. You know, I've listened to it once just to make sure there's no pops or cracks or anything, and then I listen to it once or twice more just for enjoyment, and that's it. Whereas, you know, back in the government cheese days, you would listen to the record over and over and over and over again until you decided it sucks. And that's what I did with this record. And then life was not worth living anymore. The minute that you know your record sucks, you know, you're navel-gazing 24-year-old ass doesn't know anything to get it off his mind that, oh, my God, our record sucks. It's not going to be cool. People are going to drive us out of town with sticks and throwing rocks, and there will be people with burning torches outside my apartment door demanding my head on a pike. You know, it was that intense back then, and it's not that way now, thank God.
Yeah, you had committed the ultimate sin, you know, like you weren't cool for a minute.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
A couple of minutes, and then did at any point of all these ups and downs, did you ever say, that's it, I'm sick of this, I'm not going to do it anymore, I'm sick of making records, it's the struggle's too much?
4 or 5 times, yeah. I was in that frame of mind when I made the There I Said It record in 2006. I was done. I think it was Billy Joe Shaver said, the problem with the music business is there's nobody to quit to. There's no office to walk in and say, you know, I think I've, you know, gone down this road as far as I can go. I'm going to try something else. And you turn in your key or whatever. And what would happen is I have totally quit 4 or 5 times over the last 30 years. And what always happened was I'll do what I can to get into a different kind of mindset, start applying for jobs, this and that. And then somebody will call me and say, hey, you know, what are you doing May 23rd? We need somebody at the Charles and Myrtle's Coffee House in Chattanooga. Can you come do it? And I'll go, well, it's $150. Okay, I'll come do it. And by the time that gig comes around, 2 other people have called. And then 6 months later, you're still doing gigs and nothing ever changed. And bada bing, you're still in the music business. And every time I've tried to quit, that happens.
I'm trying to remember when we very first met. And I was going through my brain earlier, which is always a dangerous exercise.
I remember.
It was Lexington, Kentucky.
Lexington, Kentucky, absolutely.
We opened up for you guys.
At the Bottom Line.
That's it. Okay.
That's right.
And you know what the club owner told me that night? He came, there's the band Smokin' Dave and the Primo Dubs opening for Government Cheese. And we're going to listen to some Government Cheese in a second after my ridiculous story's over. But the owner came and he pulled me aside and goes, we're definitely going to have you guys back. And I was like, wow, great. And he goes, you tore down faster than any band we have ever had.
I remember that manager. Did he like sit you down in a booth and sort of go over the whole show and grade you?
Yeah,
he would grade us too. We would get like from an F to an A, you know, on your grading. I've never had before or since a club owner do that, where you sit down and he'll go through, you know, practically song by song. You were a little loud here, and we'd prefer you not to try to get drinks brought to you on stage from the bar. You know, we have guys working for other people. We prefer you didn't do that. Yada, yada, yada. I remember you guys. I loved you guys. You had a Muzak medley that was hysterical. And I remember a song where you're on the road and run into Bob Dylan. Just a lovely bunch.
My memory of that gig, and it's all a little hazy. I do remember the blow-by-blow analysis from the club owner, which was actually, I thought he was actually pretty spot on his on his pros and cons. But you guys like just killed it that night. You had the college kids in the palm of your hand from the first note, and I was like, okay, this is the band I've been hearing about. But before the show started, and this is the kind of things I remember, one of the guys in your band asked us if we needed any hairspray. And I've been waiting 25 years to say, was that serious or was that joking? I still don't know.
It was, I can 98.6% guarantee you that it was just us being generous. And yes, we had hairspray, and the way you did it, you know, we weren't particularly big fans of The Cure, but that didn't matter. You stuck your head upside down, you bent over at the waist, and then you sprayed all your hair as it was hanging down so that you would lift up and your hair would be all crazy teased and sticking up a foot in the air, depending on how much hair you had. And we all had a lot more hair then. I certainly did.
I think the drummer told me, I think that's like a metaphor for something. So Government Cheese has actually gotten back together and recorded. I mean, a lot of times bands will come back and say, oh, let's do it. Let's do a knockoff gig. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's for an event or something. But you guys went the whole nine yards and made a record.
Yeah.
How was that experience, making the record?
It was awesome. It's the best record we've ever made, far and away. Brad Jones produced it, the pop Wunderkind from lives in Nashville. And it was about... It was about 2 years ago. I was driving on the way to a gig, and I called up our lead singer, Scott Willis, and said, hey, what would you think about getting together and writing some Government Cheese songs? And he was into it right away. And we went around the horn with all the guys in the band, and everybody was into doing it. And we, you know, we did it like you do in the 21st century. We all got a Dropbox folder and we all put our songs into it and made Word docs out of our lyrics and put those in the Dropbox folder. And we all listened to each other's stuff. And then we got together and rehearsed just a little bit. And we gave Brad Jones all these demos we made, and he picked out what songs he wanted to work on. He was absolutely, you know, God knows what this record would have sounded like without Brad. But he pulled all sorts of nice pop rock and hard rock ideas out for us to play. And we put the record out. When did it come out? Yeah, April of this year the record came out. And we played a series of gigs about 2 years ago to raise funds to make the record. And then we played a series of gigs this year just to promote it, mainly in Louisville, Lexington, Bowling Green, Nashville, areas where we were always super strong. And we had a ball with it, and everybody still likes each other, and it's been a gratifying experience. We even broke even.
That's that alone is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, what's a cutoff here we should check out?
Let's do track one. Let's do the title track. Billy Mack wrote this and sang it, our bass player, Billy Mack Hill. And it's the title track, The Late Show.
All right. Our guest is Tommy Womack. He's in town from Nashville where he lives. We're going to check out Government Cheese, the title track of The Late Show, the cover of the record, which is really great. I've got to get the album of this if there's an album. And it's got a young child with, it looks like a parental unit covering their ears from this particular sound you're about to hear.
Feel
I bet that feedback went on another 2 or 3 days.
Like Neil Young.
Yeah. Tommy Womack is our guest. That's Government Cheese, The Late Show. So what's going on now? You got a new thing you're working on, right?
I have a new record. It's done. I'm crowdfunding right now for it. I'm raising funds online to put it out. The record's called Namaste, N-A-M-A-S-T-E. And I recorded it at the same place that Government Cheese did that record that you just heard, with the same producer, Brad Jones, recorded it and mixed it in 6 days back in August. It was the perfect time to make a new record, because I nearly went to the meet my maker in June. I got T-boned by a semi truck at a country road intersection. And left me, June 12th is when that happened. I had four cracks in my pelvis and a big old goose egg on my other leg and a messed up foot and some bruised ribs and bruised sternum. And I was just pretty banged up. And so from June 12th until about the middle of August or so, I was just laid up, couldn't go anywhere or do anything. And as soon as I was able to get up and get out of the house, I thought, well, let's make a record, because we wiped all my gigs off the calendar for the rest of 2015, because nobody knew when I was going to be able to physically go play gigs again. And so Brad and I, sketched out 6 days to do a record in. And just like the Government Cheese record, I sent him a bunch of demos. He picked the ones he liked, and we made the record. And it's really good sounding. I forgot to bring a copy, or I'd give you a taste of it. And I'm planning on having that out in the springtime.
When does the crowdfunding deadline approach?
There is no deadline. It's however long my stomach can take it. I don't know. Maybe it's different for younger artists. I can't think of a single artist my age, or, give or take, who really wants to crowdfund. You don't, especially a lot of money was already raised for me this year because of being out of work. And, so I've been a little sheepish about going online and saying, hey, could you contribute to me releasing my record? But the economic reality is I have to do that in order to put the record out at all. As General Sherman said, the crueler it is, the sooner it'll be over.
Well, there's certain artists, and I think you're one of them, where I think over time people feel really invested in what you do. It's not, you're not just like another, oh, there's that song I like. It's like, I like this artist. I want to see what they do. I want to see where they're going. I want to see what happens next.
Yeah, and I've got people invested in me that, all over the place like that. I tend to attract those sorts of people. I don't know what it is I do, but God bless them.
Yeah, well, keep doing it, whatever it is. And let's talk about the title, Namaste.
Namaste means the spirit in me salutes the spirit in you. And I didn't know that when I picked the title. I picked it because the front cover photograph is taken of me on stage with my hands folded together and pressed up to my forehead like a Buddhist monk would greet you like. And so Namaste just fit for it as a title. And I don't really know what songs on the record really scream Namaste, you know, but it works as a title. And I kind of nicked it from a dear departed friend of mine who put out a record called Namaste a couple of years ago, Sam Baylor from Will and the Bushmen.
Right.
He did a record with a group he called Sam's Instant Band, and they called it Namaste. And Sam died earlier this year. So I don't think it's so much that I nicked the title from Sam as I'm, you know, going to write something in the CD liner notes saying, you know, this is in tribute to Sam rather than just stealing his title from the grave.
Tommy Womack, thanks so much for joining us today on Flipside. We're going to hear one more tune from There I Said It. Can I pick it?
You can pick it.
I want to hear I'm Never Going to Be a Rock Star. I don't know why that one resonated with me. It just... something, maybe it was the key it was in, you know, what key is it in?
It's in the key of sadness.
Yes.
It's in the saddest of all keys.
I love that Stevie Wonder record, Songs in the Saddest Key of Life. That was his best one, man, I think. I don't care what his people say.
I can't listen to it without crying. I never make it through side one.
Of
Songs in the Saddest Key of Life.
Yeah. Hey, where can people find out about the crowdsourcing before
we... TommyWomack.com.
All right. That's easy enough.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't spell it, then we feel sorry for you.
TommyWomack.com.
Even I got that.
Thank you, Todd.
Hey, man, thank you.
I'm never gonna be a rock star. I'm never gonna be a rock star. Never gonna be a rock star. There I said it. So everybody give me your sympathy. The whole world ought to feel sorry for me. Never got my picture in a magazine. Never had sex in a limousine. And I'm never gonna be a rock star. There I said it. You know that I love you. You know that I do. Nobody gets to hear me whine like you do. It's a guy thing, I guess. I can't explain. The hair might go, but the dream remains. And I'm never gonna be a rock star. I'm never gonna be a rock star. There I said it. You want it in writing, you want it in blood. Ain't my getting up every damn morning enough. I got buddies on the tour buses taking that ride. While I'm getting older and jealous with an itch inside. Yes. Where's my catharsis?